enjoy the journey. Enjoy the journey. Enjoy the journey.
Welcome to the podcast, Tom Seawitt. Tommy, you are a podcaster twice over, and you live on the opposite side of the country from Nathan and I, Victoria, British Columbia.
Actually, just north of there, Vancouver Island, British Columbia. I'm just on the north end of Campbell River.
The north end of Vancouver.
Vancouver Island.
Vancouver Island. Yep. Okay, I was thinking Victoria's an island, right?
Nope. Vancouver's the island. Vancouver Island's where Victoria's on. It's on the south end. Campbell River's on the sort of northeastern side.
Tom, I failed Canadian geography in high school, apparently. We did some research on you, and we're super happy to have you on Blurry Creatures. You had a really cool post that I kind of wanted to read to kick things off, to get people to get to know you. And it was a Facebook post of yours, and it goes like this. I'm going to read it. Sitting on the bridge during wheel shift at 3:40, sore hands, back, and knee where I wiped out, tripping over deck pins on board. True happiness, though, the things we get to see while traveling the British Columbia coast. Wildlife in brailler baskets full of fish, nets that bubble like a pot of boiling rice from all the salmon screaming underwater. Whales, eagles, and endless horizons with no humans. Sunsets and sunrises painting the skies in amazing colors. Yes, this is the life. Sure sad it's a way of life that may be all but a memory. We are fast becoming an endangered species, the commercial salmon fisherman.
Oh, we are. I'm 45 years into the industry. I was in diapers on commercial salmon seine boats. And then when I got out of high school, I was expanded into other fisheries throughout the coast. And I've seen the good, I've seen the bad, and now I'm seeing the disaster. It's just, It's unbearable to see that we went up north and we fished and we made, you know, a wage where we should have made $10,000 or more for the 4 weeks we fished. We made about $4,000 if we're lucky. And then we came home to Vancouver Island in the south, and there's no anticipated commercial fisheries for sockeye salmon, which the Americans call silvers or reds. And they're calling like 300,000 to return to a river where the average was 9 million fish returning every year. Sometimes up to 36 million would return. And now it's, they're pretty much probably going to list them as an endangered species here soon. And if we don't do something, an extinct species, reds down here, sockeye.
Wow. And what do you think is causing all that?
Too many damn seals and sea lions, too many damn granola chewing, blinded by concrete dust, seal huggers and sea otter huggers that don't want anything killed. And we have a complete explosion overpopulation of seals and sea lions from California right up to Southeast Alaska. And I'm the president of Pacific Balance Marine Management, which is on Facebook, but it's a provincial, I guess you could say a national push to get license for us First Nations, Canadian Indians, to hunt, harvest, and sell seals and sea lions for everything from pharmaceutical products to meat in the grocery stores and pet stores, and furs, of course, for the fashion people that want to wear it. So we're trying to get balance back in our system, and it all correlates to Sasquatch. You know, like if there's no salmon, the Sasquatches are migrating right now from the alpines down into the creeks, rivers, and streams where the salmon spawn is supposed to be taking place. Well, if there is no salmon, what do the Sasquatches and other wildlife have to eat? Nothing for this time of the year.
I love it. I love when people just own their belief in Sasquatch, and not even own it, but just say, they're migrating, they're moving. How do you know they're migrating? Like, what gives you evidence for that?
Basically, I went rogue back in the early 1990s. I turned into a rogue, hairless human, basically like a rogue Sasquatch. I got a Revenue Canada, which is your IRS, equivalent to your IRS department in the United States, send me a sweet little letter that said I owed $172,000 in back taxes. I had no way of paying it. I wasn't about to declare bankruptcy due to pride. So I looked around, and no offense to the listeners and to you two, but you got to remember I'm a Canadian Indian, but I said, I'm sick and tired of Whitey's world. I'm leaving it. I'm getting off Whitey's radar. And I walked into the bush, and I stayed there for 9 years. And I came out, you know, I came out to party and spend money I was making out there. I became a grizzly bear hunting guide for Safari Club International clients. I lived in an abandoned native village doing native cultural tours to the kayakers and people off yachts and sailboats. I was one of the best Indian seafood poachers the coast ever seen because I would do semi-trailer loads of fish and I never got caught. So that gives me a good ranking. And I was a commercial fisherman. And during the winter times, I would go watch logging camps when everyone went home for Christmas and snow season. And did it by myself. So basically, I went rogue. And, you know, I was at one time, I walked into the bush and I was in there for almost probably close to 5 months when a helicopter landed and he enticed me with a thermos of coffee and a pack of cigarettes to come close to the helicopter. And when I went there, he said, Tom, it's time for you to come home. People are worried about you. And I was, I was apprehensive to go near him. And that's how rogue I went. I went total bush. And, you know, so I know what the Sasquatches are like. And then living out there, Sasquatches are like white bears, white deer, white moose, white whales. You spend enough time in the bush, you're going to see, smell, or hear them. And they're just feral humans. They're just humans like me that got pissed off with society thousands of years ago and went and lived a more in tune with nature type of existence without greed, envy, hate, because my teachers have told me from Omaha that Sitonga, their Sasquatch, have laws, very strict laws.
Yeah.
And others that I've spoken to, we have a bridge with some tribe members throughout Sasquatch Island, which is North America, otherwise known as Turtle Island to Indians, but I call it Sasquatch Island because we all have the stories. And there's some of us, some not me, but some are making that and have been making it for generations, the Diane Fossey, Jane Goodall bridge to the Sasquatches in their regions. And we learn things from them. And that's what I'm doing, is bringing that out. It's time for the non-Indian to start learning our ways so they can smarten up and say, no, we can't disrespect them. We can't shoot them. And that's what I'm all about, is protecting.
Well, I think, sorry to cut in, I think that you bring up a good point in there that a lot of times, like when Luke and I are, you know, we're kind of finding this when we're talking to our friends, there's just so much skepticism. And it seems like in the native culture, it's just, it's more, what are these creatures? Where do they come from? There's not this huge emphasis on trying to prove that this thing exists. It's more, how do we help it? How do we live with it? How do we
protect it?
Yeah.
You know, look what, you know, no offense.
Why is that? Why is there this big chasm between us down here in the States and people who live closer to nature?
Well, number one, your Bible thumping mercenaries are going to go after them and try to convert them to Christianity. Look at the damage they did to the indigenous people of the Americas, and they're still doing it. The hell are they sending missionaries to our reservations for? We don't want to have that book shoved down our throat sideways. They're going to do the same thing with the Sasquatch. And that's why I need to educate the native people and others that, no, we're going to have to start, you know, Bible thumping them when they try to come after Sasquatch, when they are scientifically proven to exist. Because trust me, if they can go to the Maldive Islands with their Bibles off in the Indian Ocean to try to convert those indigenous people that have never technically been bridged with modern humans, what's going to stop them from doing it to Sasquatches? And then you got all of our filthy, rotten diseases. Look what smallpox, influenza, tuberculosis, venereal disease, alcohol, and bullets did to the indigenous people of the Americas. That's why I'm trying to educate people to, you know, learn, know your history so you're never destined to repeat its failures. Don't send your missionaries, and please don't send your General Custers into the other tribes' territory, the Sasquatches, when they do get conclusively proven to exist.
Hey, Tom, can we back up just a second, though, just for context here?
You're a native Canadian Indian from British Columbia. What is your tribe? And can you talk a little bit about that so we can, I know we jumped into it, but I think just for context for our listeners.
Northeastern Vancouver Island is the Kwakwaka Yuwak Nation. That's what I belong to. We were made up of about 23 different distinct tribes that all spoke the same language of Kwakwala. And Kwakwaka Yuwak means the Kwakwala speaking people. That's from my father's side. My mother's a full-blooded Cree Indian from central Canada and Saskatchewan. And so I'm mixed blood, but brought up on the coast. But when you research the Kwakwaka Yuwak, otherwise known as Kwagyutl or Kwagyoth, you'll find that we have the greatest connection to the Sasquatch, which we call Chunahua. Chunahua was mixed in, lost in translation to come out meaning wild woman of the woods. It actually means like an ogre, a big, the other tribe, the hairy one, the big one. And it's our highest ranked crest. We see it on our totem poles to this day. I have it on my shirt, my one of my designs of Chunahua. And where I am right now in Campbell River, it's a small city with the highest concentration of wood carving and other art depictions of Chunahua and Sasquatch in the world. Right here, and most people, when I talk to them in Campbell River, they scratch their head and go, dang, I didn't realize that. I'm like, yeah, look around. Sasquatch is everywhere here.
Yeah, and we've heard a lot about how Sasquatch in different areas of North America are different. The farther north you go, we've been told the bigger they are, and the more south you go, they get a little bit shorter. They get a little more animal-like. Do you find that the Sasquatch near you guys are friendlier? What, you know, you were out in the bush for 9 years, you said. What kind of personal interactions? Like, what was the most mind-blowing interaction you had with these animals?
The best interaction I had was I knew I was being probed by two Sasquatches. One was a big footprint, which I knew was the big boy that usually hung around where I lived out in the mouth of Knights Inlet. And I told my crew, I said, we're building these cabins for my tribe. I told them, I said, we're end of September, we're starting to be probed by a Sasquatch, possibly two. There's a smaller track around 14 inches.
Yeah.
I said, don't be afraid. I said, if you smell something, hear something, just say, yo, weeksus, majos ye chunahua. Hello, Sasquatch. I don't know who you are. How you doing? And I said, and just turn around and walk away. I said, everything's fine. And then sure enough, we had a few things happen. And one night I was sitting there and I was having a cigarette outside one of the cabins and my crew partner was inside Facebooking or something. But anyway, I was under the front roof and I was having my smoke and it was drizzling and I smelled something and I'm like, okay. So I inched along the building and I jumped out and I went, yeah. And there was this juvenile Sasquatch about 6 foot high and skinny and, you know, felt like a teenager. All of a sudden its eyes went big. It looked at me and I went, oh, turned and just poof, disappeared in the bush.
No way.
I was laughing away and I went into the cabin, told my native partner. He's like, quit teasing the Chunahua. They're going to get mad at us. So the next night, a couple nights later, our garlic was going missing from our kitchen area, which was just under a tarp. And we knew it was them taking it. So I put my camo on, put my 12 gauge and my 338 out the window, and I started crawling out the window, and my crewmate goes, what are you doing? I said, whatever happens, don't you shoot with that 30-30 until I tell you or you see me. And I said, I'm gonna go see if I can see that Chunahua. So I crawled out the window and I crawled, but we'd been clearing brush and cutting trees down and raking leaves, and yeah. I strategically made all these piles of leaves to burn in November when the rains come, and this is October. I strategically did it so I could scurry on my belly, crawling from berm to berm. And I got behind my cabin about 60 feet on the entrance to the trail into the woods where our outhouse was. And I crawled into this pile of leaves and I pulled it over top of me with my camo hat and just a little sliver so I could see, and two guns beside me. And just as it got dark, that juvenile Sasquatch come out of the bush and it grabbed a tree in it with its left hand and bent down with its right leg off this 4 foot dirt berm that used to be the old logging road edge. And it's looking at my cabin and all of a sudden from 5 feet away, I come shooting out of leaves. Yeah. And that thing bent that tree and it sprung up and it yelled and there's leaves falling. It's, the tree was snapping and that thing looked at me and just with this pissed off look, it just turned and sounded like a D8 cat rushing through the bush and then jumped on the leaves laughing away and ran back to the cabin. My partner's there with the 30-30. Quit picking on the Sasquatch.
Why the guns? You know, like it feels like a little contradictory to what I understand. A little bit about how you feel about the creatures.
Well, I ain't stupid. So if you're I know, selling, but... if you're selling Girl Scout cookies with your daughter and there's a white picket fence all around the house and it says, beware of my pit bull, and there's an empty doghouse, do you open the gate and walk to the door to sell your cookies? Hell no.
No.
That pit bull is going to rip you a new one. Well, in the bush, I will never hunt Sasquatch. I will never go after them. I always carry a rifle. But in that situation where I was hopefully going to get close to them, what would have happened if that thing went rogue on my butt and tried to rip me from limb to limb? Well, being an Indian, exactly. I have an Indian card that says I'm allowed to food, social, ceremonial, harvest 365 days a year with no limit. So I can live off the environment. Well, in my philosophy, anything comes within a 10-foot radius of me wanting to rip me from limb to limb or rip me a new one, it becomes food, social, ceremonial real quick and gets full of lead.
Well,
that's standard. The bush.
My question really is, like, have you heard of any, like, violent encounters? Because it seems like they're, from my understanding, they're a little more, they're not as mean and aggressive up in that area. But do you find there's stories of them being like that where you need to shoot?
Well, we have a woman, apparently, that was, her brother was notified by the police about 5 years ago that her body was found at a rest stop north of Campbell River on the Vancouver Island Highway. A rest stop that had cement picnic tables, outhouse units, all kinds of stuff. Well, they told her logger brother that she was found decapitated, her left arm removed, her body pummeled, her clothes intact. She was not sexually attacked. And they know that it wasn't a bear, a wolf, cougar, or anything natural. They figure that a Bigfoot, Sasquatch killed your sister. So then a few months later, we have a 16-year-old boy go missing here in Campbell River at the edge of the wood on the north side of town. Living in a trailer park, mom said, there's some bears coming in out in the backyard again. I can hear something out there. Oh, it's all right, mom. I'll go scare it away. Grabs a flashlight, walks down the stairs, goes out the back gate into the wood. Never seen from again. His posters are still all over Campbell River almost 4 years later. You know, look at what's his name with missing 411. You know, these things, some of those Sasquatches like beans, human beings. Our stories tell about Chonachua will take misbehaving children and rub spruce sap from a tree in their eyes so they can't see, put them in a basket and on her back or in a sack she's woven from spruce root or cedar fibers and bring them deep into the forest where she boils them up and eats them. So there's cannibal stories throughout many First Nations and American Indians. We know those, some of them like beans, human beings. And it's no different than some of the Pacific Northwest coastal tribes. We had cannibalism out here prior to the European contact. And trust me, I belong to the Hamatsa society, and that's part of that ceremonial ritualistic that cannibalism, we don't practice it, but we still have the society, and it's very, very powerful to be a Hamatsa that I belong to. And, you know, in the modern world, I got a few enemies out there I'd like to boil up and eat.
You know, it's the giants, right? The giants used to be the things to be scared of. And, you know, in fairy tale, they would boil children and eat them. And on that violent side, that's still Sasquatch. That's not a different cryptid. It's not a werewolf. It's the same hairy man of the woods or hairy woman of the woods, as you said, that will not always be benevolent.
Well, because it's in our lore and our culture, you know, there's that trait of it eating misbehaving children. Other tribes speak of it differently, of course. But as an investigator for the last 8 years or so, you know, I never was an investigator. I was basically forced because of finding Bigfoot, Renee, you know, her skepticism. I used to almost want to throw my wine bottle at her TV screen sitting yeah, with my yeah. wife down in Washington State when I came out of Bush a few years back. And I'm like, what do they mean if these creatures exist? Yeah. If there was a Sasquatch? There's no bloody if about it. Those things are out there. I've seen them, smelled them, heard them around me. So I became an investigator. And what I found fine now looking into it and working with Lucas White, the Omaha tribe member, who's a good friend in my Sasquatch Island, Nebraska chapter president, they have laws, very strict laws. There's four social classes to the Sitonga, the Sasquatch, in his neck of the woods. There's harvesters, hunters, scouts, and rogues. Rogues are the male leaders that were displaced from a clan unit. It's nature. Nature's code dictates that the gene pool must always oust one or another one to get into leadership, to spread the seed, to genetically strengthen the wolf pack, or be it a human family or tribe, or even Sasquatch units. So just like when you guys got dumped and the listeners got dumped from a girlfriend, you went rogue for a while. You got pulled yourself into a whiskey bottle, and you best way to get under, get over one woman was to get under many others. You know, we went rogue.
I've heard about this. I've heard about the rogue Sasquatch. There's all, like, a lot of people say there's encounters with just one male in the middle of nowhere, and that's, you know, it's just random. And I've heard even the Land of Lakes, just north of Tennessee, someone was telling me that they think all the rogues kind of congregate up there, and there's really violent encounters just in the Land of Lakes in the Kentucky, Tennessee area. And so it's weird, man. You go down these trails, and people, not only do they believe, but they have very specific beliefs about what they're doing and what they're not doing. Do you think that they migrate up and down the coast, and they get all over the place? How far do you think these things are traveling?
They're staying within territorial boundaries based on high seasonal protein sources and also geographical features. So in other words, yeah. you have a mountain with a salmon stream on either side. Well, there'll be a clan unit from my investigations in each river system. Offshore in the islands between Vancouver Island and the mainland, those are where the shellfish beaches are. So the Kwakwaka'wakw and other coastal tribes would seasonally migrate sometimes up to 6 different areas of harvest and living each year. The Sasquatch is doing the same. So here in British Columbia, in your winter of January through March, they're in the shellfish zones. And then in March, when the herring comes to spawn, they move to where the spawning is going to take place with herring, because they come right in the shallows. You can reach down and grab them and fill a 5-gallon bucket in 15 minutes. And then after herring, some of them move up to the head of the inlets, to the glacier melt rivers, where the ooligan, the candlefish, goes to spawn and turns rivers black. There's so many. And then come the springtime, when the big low tides come, some of them will start migrating out to the outer islands and beaches, because that's where on the big low tide they can get the abalone, the chitons, the limpets, the shellfish that is now getting green, so it's not good to eat. So they have to go to other marine resources in May and June. And then June comes and the berries come, and they start following those berries, but a lot of them are following the snowmelt up the mountains, because they're looking up, and when they see the turkey vultures and the golden eagles coming from down in the United States to Canada, BC, and the gold and the bald eagles up there and the ravens, they know that the snow is melting and it's exposing ungulates, elk or deer or bears or cougar or wolves that died in the winter, didn't get off the mountains quick enough, and they succumbed to the snows. Now they were in refrigeration all winter, and now when the snows recede, there's carrion. Carrion is still in the Sasquatch diets throughout North America. So me being a bushman, commercial fisherman, and the experiences I have, look at the whole Sasquatch equation at a different level. And as you guys see, I can tell by you guys' facial features, you guys are going, holy shit, where the hell did this guy come from? He definitely knows a little bit other stuff on the Sasquatch.
I mean, I love it, because you, like Luke and I, so we've been trying to build the case on our podcast. We're starting out pretty new. We both had bigger podcasts in different realms, and this is something I've been looking into for a long time, and I was really wanting to do a podcast about it. But one of the major pillars of one of our first episode of Belief is sort of all the Native American history behind this creature, and it's something you can't deny. I've heard there's almost 100 different names for Bigfoot in Native American culture and legend. Is that number accurate? Were we right on that, or are we wrong?
There's 660 some odd tribes in the United States and Canada. So you can
break probably
that
more than 100.
Well over 450 names for it.
Oh, wow. That's a lot. That's hey, that's great, because always better to be a little under than over, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, so we're talking about, I mean, the terms you're using here are very biological. We're talking about, you know,
yeah,
migration and food sources and the way these creatures move with the seasons and with the game and then also the carrion and all that kind of stuff. There is a very supernatural portion to at least the legend of Sasquatch and Bigfoot, and there's a big camp within this Bigfoot community that also believes Bigfoot to be a supernatural being, you know, maybe not biological but fully supernatural, or maybe a mix of the two. From your standpoint, being an Aboriginal person, is there a supernatural element to Bigfoot, or is this purely a biological creature that is you know, is closely related, as you might have said before, to humans, but nothing like nothing supernatural, not a spirit or a I don't know, a boogeyman kind of thing. What's your thought on that? Is because I know the Native American people are very connected to the earth and in a spiritual way as well, and you know, we as humans are spiritual beings, but is there a supernatural element in your mind or in your worldview to the Sasquatch, or to what, I forget how you, the name you guys have for it. I'd flub it to death trying to say it, but yeah. Is there anything supernatural?
Jonah Hua is said to be is one of the supernatural creatures because it's so unknown, like Thunderbird, right, and double dorsfin, yeah, killer whale, and double headed sea serpent. I come at it from what my experience, it's a critter. It poops, it pees, it leaves tracks, it eats, and it's curious to humans. When people equate the UFO flying, porthole jumping, cloaking, mind speaking Sasquatch, the majority of them are on glue or mushrooms.
So no experiences with mind speak or anything like that?
No, those are people that got so shit scared they pooped in their pants, and all of a sudden they came up with their mind kicked in, and oh, it cloaked, it jumped through this tree structure, and all of a sudden it vanished into smoke, and it was reading my mind. Oh, well, come on now, do a few more mushrooms.
Well, I got to push back a little bit, because, and I asked about, you know, Luke asked a good question about, do you think it's other cryptids, is that many people think there are different forms of Bigfoot. It's not just one type. You know, you've got some that have, you know, been described to have like wolf-like teeth. They like razor blade teeth, and they call them Janosqua. And those ones are real aggressive, and they'll rip your head off. They have like armor on. They're not like the friendly Sasquatch of the Pacific Northwest. So are we, what if some of them have supernatural powers and some don't, you know? What about that?
I don't know. God's got supernatural powers, and who's seen him yet? You know, that's the way I look at it. You know, it's
Elijah.
When these people come up with these claims of these supernatural mind speaking, cloaking, UFO flying, like I say, I just laugh, and you know, and I'm Bigfoot without the bullshit. So, you know,
well, they have good arguments, because like humans can kill everything, and we can't seem to kill this thing and prove that it exists. So it seems to have some sort of power, supernatural power, to avoid getting shot. I mean, how do you explain that? I mean, humans are pretty good hunters.
No.
You know?
No.
We're not. We're bad.
We think we are good. That's our problem, our ego, our vanity. So what we have to look at it is to be humble. And say, wow, here we are in 2020. I can pick up my cell phone and instantaneously talk to anyone around the world. Wow, that's pretty cool, because
that's cool.
We can't find Sasquatch. We can't find Sasquatch. We can't find Sasquatch.
I guess I'm just not so quick to leave the supernatural argument quite just yet. Do you feel like that's a held belief of natives around the United States too, or is it different tribe to tribe of what they think these things are, or is it pretty universally, you know, agreed upon?
To my fellow Indians that believe in that supernatural aspects of their other tribe members that they share their homelands with, I totally respect and support what they think, but I can only speak for the region I operate in. And for the tribes that have that supernatural aspect, I totally respect and support that. But in most cases, if I'm at a conference or gathering and some native person comes to me, I respectfully say, thank you very much, but I'm needed over here.
I
don't want to hear it. You know, it's like when a Jehovah's Witness shows up at my door. You know, I answer the door bare ass naked, buck naked, and I go, shalom. You know, shalom. What I'm doing.
And the whole Native American worldview on this, do you really believe that the Aboriginal people have a special connection with Sasquatch? It sure feels like there's a different connection for Indigenous people. Can you talk about that and maybe what that is? Is it just from coexisting in the same place for so long, or is there actually some kind of special symbiotic relationship that exists that like the rest of us don't have?
Huge. Number one, we feel the ramifications from the negativity that was inflicted upon us as Native peoples in Canada and the US. So residential schools, forced into reservation, trails of tears where thousands of tribe members would die being migrated forcibly to an Indian reservation. Missionaries whooping my dad and a sign in school that said, the Queen's English will be the only language spoken in these halls. Anything different will be punished with the cane. I was whooped and beaten the head with a bell in nursery school and a stick in kindergarten because I was using my language. So we look at that and we look at the other tribe, the Sasquatches that we share our homelands with, and we don't want the injustices, the negativity inflicted upon them. And that's why a lot of tribes are clammed up about it. Les Stroud goes to the Indian village in coastal British Columbia. And out of respect for them, I'm not going to say their tribe name, but tribe members from there, I know more about the Sasquatch in that area than Les learned when he was there, because I'd been there many times as a commercial fisherman. And now with the white man's magic, no offense people, but messenger, I get, Tom, listen to this, 1:30 in the morning as I'm waking up, and I'm like, what the heck's going on? He goes, I got my phone out my window, man, and here's a Sasquatch screaming in that native village and many others that I hear about. But we don't go out there, and, you know, Les went there. He was given a little bit. He was given a tip of an iceberg.
You got any nuggets for us? What are some things that you know that he don't know?
He's got to quit wearing too much clothes, bandana on his head, and having all that electronics.
They don't like electronics, do they?
They don't like electronics. Lucas down in Macy, Nebraska, he was trying to get close to the Sitonga that was behind these bushes. And every time he tried to get close, the thing would move off until he took his knife out, his money from his pocket, his cell phone, and threw it. And then he was able to approach within about 65 feet from the Sitonga in the bushes.
How do they know? I mean, that's a supernatural question. How do they know you got technology?
See, concrete. The nose never lies. So out here, I can travel at night, and I can go to a prominent feature on my course, pitch black in an 18-foot aluminum speedboat, flying with a 65 horse off the back, light a cigarette, make a 90-degree turn, and go across an open channel. When I get to the cigarette button, I flick it. I grab the throttle because I know it's time now. I'm not looking at a watch. I know that all of a sudden, bang, I'm going to get hit with the smell of the bull kelp or the pop kelp. And I know to slow down, or the moss sphagnum moss.
Yeah, the nose knows, right?
Yeah. So they just have these instincts. They have instincts.
Look at your dog. Watch your dog animals when they lick their nose. There's a reason why animals have a long tongue to lick their nose.
They can smell game cams. They can smell cell phones. They can smell it all, basically.
Try it when you go home. lick your fingers, put them in your nose, smell. You'll be able to smell your wife's perfume. If you keep doing it every night, you're going to be able to pick up things. The smell of your dog, the smell of your carrots in your backyard when you open the back door, the smell of your wife before you see her. Moisture, if I'll do it again, but I'll use the other hand. Don't ever make that mistake. Use a glass of water. Like when you're out in the bush, always put that moisture in your nose. Same way a dog, grizzly bears, black bears, when they're ready to come trying to laser beam where you are, they're licking their nose. They're getting their follicles wet to smell better.
But to go back to what you were saying before, there's things that you guys keep to yourselves is what you're saying. You don't. The tribes keep it to themselves. They don't like to share this information. There's sort of an inside knowledge on these creatures. Is that kind of what I'm picking up? Like, they're a little bit of trepidation, don't want to, you know?
Well,
don't want to share too much. Don't want people coming in your areas and stuff like that.
So look at the name of your guys' podcast, Blurry Creatures. Why do you think Sasquatch shudders and shakes when someone's pointing the camera at him? Why do you think he just turns and vanishes? Why does he just peek at us and not actually come and sit with us at our fires or invite us to come sit with him? They despise us. They loathe us. They pity us. Look what we are doing and what we have done to our environment, their environment. We're the dumbest animal. We'll defecate and urinate where we harvest our food. We will grow our food in human feces. We will pollute and build houses upon where we grow our food and should be growing our food. We're the dumbest critter on this planet. We're destined to doom. Now, all of a sudden, we get sent COVID. You know, wake up. The 100-year present is coming to you. It was Spanish flu last time. It was bubonic plague before and yada, yada, yada. Now we send you COVID, you know. And first thing we did as Native people, that the ones that I communicate with that are having interactions, is we went out where we offer the foods, and we'd go out just before dark and we'd offer the food and we'd break a stick, snap it, something that you could just barely break. And then we'd start coughing and sneezing and retching. And then we grab the food and go back in. And hour after dark, we'd go out and repeat that procedure. And then just before we went to bed, we'd go repeat it again. So for the ones that have the interactions with their Sasquatches, it was us passing them the message that we hairless humans, we're sick again. Don't come near us. And I know of 6 places where the Sasquatches vanished. They heeded the warning. My area was one of them. You know, look at us as humans. We're stupid, filthy, and we are going to have a pandemic on our hands here where I'm probably going to have to go rogue and go back into the bush and live like a Sasquatch because, you know, I'm a human. I'm a fighter.
Another walkabout. So I know you did an interview about this before, Tom. You talked about Sasquatch's vulnerability to COVID-19. Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, we just kind of touched on that, but you believe that Sasquatch is actually susceptible, right?
I'm not laughing because I think it's funny. I just, the whole thing is humorous, but I totally believe it could be possible. Sorry, didn't mean to laugh at you.
We know that the Sasquatches came to our Indian villages with their young and their arms and their sick being dragged, and their Sasquatch clans were covered in smallpox. And our chiefs looked at their men and said, go into the big house, get our people. And they came out with their children and their family members covered in smallpox. And those chiefs looked at the Sasquatches like, we can't help you. We're got the smallpox disease they didn't know about as well.
Unbelievable.
And the Sasquatches turned and walked into the forest. So when contact started in the Americas, all of the reports about the mountain devils, Sasquatches, the ape men, in the early newspapers, there was a lot of reports. But then all of a sudden, the numbers dissipate. And then 1967, Roger Patterson, Bob Gimlin film Patty, and we start to see a bell curve going up steadily with more encounters, more reports coming out, and it's exploding now in reports. Not so much because of internet, because of the internet, but also because there's more. So when I was born in 1965, there was less than 1,000 Kwakwaka'wakw. We're over 8,000 strong now. That's indicative of every indigenous tribe throughout the entire Americas. We've proliferated like bunny rabbits, as too has Sasquatch. And that's why we're seeing so many reports. And in my and investigations were finding subunits in inferior lands between river systems with no clam beaches.
I love all this stuff. These are the questions I want to ask. How strong are these things? And then we can talk a little about the population.
In Omaha, in Macy, Nebraska, they have the big elk cabins, and they do hunting of turkey and deer down there and quail or anyway. But they have a reefer unit on blocks, and that's where they put their animals during the hunting season. Well, you know, the back of semi-trailers, that two handles you lift up and open so the doors open? Well, that one there is stainless steel. And if you go to Sasquatch Island, or your viewers want to email me, I can even send you a picture from my laptop tonight of that bloody...
Yeah, you got to send it to us.
You can see the edge of the door has been, like, peeled, and that stainless steel handle's bent like a J.
Jeez.
Like, that is the first time ever I seen the strength of a Sasquatch. And, you know, but then when you look at the stories, how they just jump off a highway 20 feet.
Yeah.
Up, you know,
they say 45 miles an hour they can run, they think, you know.
Well, I've seen them move. They move like when you see that Flash guy from the Marvel comics and that new TV movie. That's what it almost looked like. That thing was like zip.
It's like the Usain Bolt of Sasquatches going.
Yeah. I see 50, someone
55.
See, most people would see that and they would say, oh, it's cloaking.
No, he's just moving faster than you can see.
Yeah, so we've asked a lot of those questions. These are the ones I always wish, you know, we'd get more answers of, because people want to know how strong they are. I mean, you're talking maybe 25, 30 times stronger than a man.
Well, look at Ape Canyon. It punched that log in that log cabin house in, and that big arm reached in. And, you know, and then when you see, you read the, but then that's one of the things I kind of found funny about the Ape Canyon report. They were at the door, two of them holding it from the Sasquatch getting in. Yet one Sasquatch was able to punch in a log underneath. See, Dr. John Bindernagel, when he was alive and teaching me everything from 1991 onwards, he always taught me, when in doubt, throw it out. I'm not saying Ape Canyon's BS. I'm just saying that there's a little bit of cloudiness in there.
Well, I heard those stories too, a lot of times. Like, they'll attack cabins, or they'll have encounters. It almost sounds like they're doing some kind of bluff charge where they're coming in, they're scaring the tar out of you, they're showing their strength, but if they could rip a door off and get in. So many reports of people saying they're at the door, and you always think, how come they don't just break the door down? I don't understand that, but it sounds like they're just flexing, you know. I don't know. I have no idea.
I totally agree with you. I think they're just, you know, they're having fun, like you two right now. That's why we got these. We like to laugh. That's why we got bellies. Yeah. You know, and I think they're doing the same thing, you know. Oh man, as soon as, you know, all of a sudden the supposed attack ends, they're probably sitting there barrel laughing in the bush, laughing, going, well, how come you called it off? Well, because I started smelling poop from inside that cabin. You know, enough's enough. We went far enough. We got them to crap their pants. You know, everything's got humor, and they're feral humans. They're humans. So, to me, so they got humor.
Sorry, I just have so many questions. I don't know if I cut you off, Luke, if you were going to ask something.
No,
but
no. I'm thoroughly enjoying this over here.
Have you seen any other cryptids? Because we've heard, you know, stories of ogre-like creatures up in Canada walking around with clubs and moccasin, like sheepskin boots and weird stuff. Dog man. Have you heard or seen any other things besides Sasquatch?
We have another creature referred to in Washington State and southern British Columbia with the Coast Salish people as stick people, the little people. My language, we call it Bukwus. It's about 4 feet high, covered in hair. It's the keeper of the ghost realm, so it's supernatural. So apparently when you die from drowning, you screwed up. You never listened to your teachings. You screwed up big time. You died. You drowned. Your spirit goes to the ghost world, where it's in limbo. It doesn't go to heaven, I guess, like a purgatory. But that's where the commander, the leader of that, the chief of that, is Bukwus. And he's supposed to be skeletal looking, covered in hair and a greenish face. And every family and tribe has different stories about it. But me, because I'm an investigator, and, you know, I've always been Tommy 10,000 questions, I want an answer. I look at it in the critterist side. So of late, I've come to the belief that there's another cryptid out there, a little small
little
one,
people
like Orang Pendek. Maybe he migrated mm-hmm. over from Indonesia, Asia, over the Bering Land Bridge and came down into the Americas. I don't know. But we do know there's something small out there. And years ago, I guess early 90s, I went into Bond Sound. I was asked to go in and change waterproof paper on a graph recording the water levels of this salmon stream. Go in with my speedboat, leave the gun in the boat, and walk up the creek about maybe, I guess, 400 yards. And then I get to hear this, and the bush is scurrying. And I'm like changing the graph and I'm thinking, what the heck is that? Doesn't sound like mink. And don't think it's raccoons. And I'm changing the graph and I glocked the thing and I turned and on the gravel bar was a little human footprint. Well, wow. I bet you if you went back an hour later, you would have seen this human's footprints 20 feet apart because that's how fast I went 400 yards down to my boat, got the hell in it, got out of there. And I think I had bukus around me, some of them. And we even have some pretty good pictures out there in the Bigfoot world.
Well, we've heard creatures. Stories of the little people.
Yeah.
We've heard stories of the little people. They say, missing 411, that some guys think that those guys are a part of it, taking people.
We had an interview too with a guy talking about Henry Hudson exploring Canada and the Hudson River, and them coming on dwarves playing nine pin and drinking. Little guys, those little guys I want to hang out with, not so much the ones that are part of the spirit world. I want to go the ones that are playing bowing and drinking.
Well, playing nine pin and drinking, I think old Henry Hudson was the one drinking.
It's hard to believe. What about the stories of Native Americans and the giants, the literal giants, killing them, putting them in these burial mounds all over the United States and all over
Sasquatch.
So giants and Sasquatch are the same thing.
Because you look at the skulls.
The same thing?
Look at the skulls. So if you, when in doubt, throw it out. What I always look at is the distance between the bottom of the nose and the teeth or the upper lip, the philtrum area. That's a philtrum, but the philtrum area. If it's very pronounced, to me, that's a Sasquatch. So the Smithsonian one.
This is the double rows of teeth, six-fingered giants. Because I've...
You've been listening to the Queen of the Woo-Woo, that cat, whatever her name is?
No.
I said she... I went on her, on her
Carol
podcast.
Baskin?
No. Carol Baskin? Her name's Cat something. I was on her podcast. I was on a podcast and she came on. And I had to tell her she's so full of shit, her eyes are brown.
I'm talking about the giants of they're described as six-fingered, double rows of teeth, red hair, kind of look like.
Have any
know.
Stories or any skeletal remains in my neck of the woods?
Well, I mean, it's more historical, passed down stories and stuff, because they're supposedly killed off at some point.
You got to remember, my area of British Columbia was, if it wasn't under ice during 5,000 years ago and beyond, the water tables were 120 feet lower. So if there's any remains of giants in my region, it's not going to be at present sea level and up, because this would have been all high level. It will be out submerged 100 to, like, if you look at Google Earth and you look at British Columbia, you'll see the ancient riverbeds going offshore some 400 miles. I commercial fished out there for black cod and halibut. I know about those trenches. And then all of a sudden, side sonar, Google Earth comes out. And I went, hey, someone found our fishing grounds. We used to fish those trenches. We knew those. We had them marked out on charts. And they correlate to Google Earth. So that's where the ancient villages are. What we're seeing up here on coastal regions was alpine. What we're seeing from central North America, where the mounds are and the supposed giant skeletons and things like that. No, absolutely. And, I think, Earth's been occupied for far longer than what we want to believe at this point.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, so no dogman encounters, no werewolf creatures.
Nothing here.
Nothing like that
just
up there.
Just the little people, and then, of course, Sea Youth, the double-headed sea serpent. People are still seeing the dinosaur-type flippered animals swimming around.
Oh, yeah. There's supposed to be one in Lake Okanagan, right? They're in B.C.
Ogopogo.
Yeah,
so the reason why I think it's double-headed is you watch rattlesnakes, and when they do the mating ritual, they'll entwine male and female. And I speculate that one of my ancestors from the Kwakwaka'wakw saw two of them entwining their neck. And that's where the double-headed sea serpent came from. So I don't know what they're...
He just barged in on an intimate moment of some sea creatures.
Sea sex.
It seems like the experiences you've had with Sasquatch have not been all that scary. You recount stories of, like, you know, scaring juveniles, and is there like a benevolence there? I know there's a respect there, obviously, for their, we talked about their strength and their size and their abilities, and is it because they're more human, or what is it about a Sasquatch, at least from what I'm gleaning from this, that maybe inspires less fear than more fear than you would have in leading a grizzly bear hunt?
Only a fool will not be afraid. And there's no such thing as an atheist in the storm. And I've been commercial fishing for 45 years. I've seen many men praying in a toilet, I tell you, in the storms.
Yeah.
So every time I have an encounter with a Sasquatch, yeah, you can feel your heart pounding. You can feel your legs shaking. You can feel your throat going dry. It's one of the most intimidating moments you'll ever experience. And that's why I like the chase. I love that adrenaline rush. Makes you feel carpe frickin' diem, boy. Yeah. You can go to bed happy that night.
Feeling alive.
But it is scary. Like when I was in Macy, Nebraska, staying in those cabins, there's 11 small cabins in Big Elk Park for the Omaha tribe, and just half a mile from the Missouri River. And I didn't have a gun. And I'm staying in there at 5 o'clock. I'd watch the workers, three workers jump in their vehicle and drive 5 miles to Macy. I was all by myself in Timbuk frickin' nowhere, Nebraska, along the shores of the Missouri River with sitongas all over, where they got an 11 o'clock at night to a 7 o'clock curfew for the native people not to go on the street because that's the time of the sitonga. Well, the air conditioner's going because it's 97 degrees and it's sticky hot. And I'm not used to that from the coast. You know, it's rain. It's liquid sunshine we get out here. And I'm reading my book, and all of a sudden, you just smell Missouri mud and the smell of a sour, rotten street person multiplied by 25 to 50. A sitonga walked by my intake of my air conditioner. And I'm just like, book down. Okay, what do I got here? Because that bug, and because when I got in the cabin, I kid you not, there was plywood and other things barricaded against the windows in this cabin. And the other cabins I went to look at, because they weren't locked, were the same. And I'm like, what the heck's going on here? Well, now I'm figuring out why the windows are barricaded and they got mattresses up against them and all that. These sitongas are probing the cabins at night. So I'm sitting there, and then all of a sudden you hear kabang against the back of the tin sheeting on the cabin. Kabang. Three times kabang. And I'm sitting there standing on the table in the cabin, which is all sheeted in aluminum. And I'm getting not even a bar on my cell phone. And I get a bar, and I phone the native guide who's supposed to be with me. I'm like, you get down here with that car right now. And he got down there, and I told him what's happening. So he stayed with me. And yeah, I was scared because I didn't know what those sitongas are like. And then all of a sudden, the second night, or a couple nights later, the same thing happens. But this time it's more aggressive. The rock throwing, the walking by the air conditioner now goes like half a dozen times, and I'm just like, oh Jesus, what do I got? I got a knife, I got a Bic lighter, and I got bug spray. Okay, Bic lighter, bug spray, got a flamethrower, knife. I'm taking eyes out, or I'm taking what I can. And it was so bad that when I'm talking in the day to people doing this tourism survey for the tribe for 2 weeks, as I'm doing my contracted job during the day, I'm also getting all the Sasquatch stories, seeing houses with a mean dog chained to all four corners and motion lights all around the house. People who have cleared top of a hill is a house, and all around it for 200 yards, there's no trees because of the sitongas. And people all have buckets. They're putting waste food out the back door into the bushes to feed the sitongas so they don't bang on their houses or smash their vehicle windows. That's how scared the people are of sitonga there. So I'm like, I'm bait out there, man. I'm missing 411 here if I don't get a gun.
They're like, hey, the new guy will bring him in.
So get this. I'm the Indian guide who I fired that day. Anyway, we're driving into town and he goes, oh, there's my cousin, the police officer, tribal police officer. I said, I want to talk to him. So I pull up to him. I tell him what's going on down at the cabins. He goes, where are you going? I said, to the band up tribe office. The chief is giving me a pickup truck because of the Sitongas, and I'll have it now to use, at least get out of there. And he goes, okay, I'll meet you down at your cabin in 15 minutes. That tribal police officer shows up at my cabin, gets out of his cruiser, unbuckles his belt, takes off a 40 caliber pistol, puts it on the picnic table and goes, I'm going to give you this. You're a Canadian that is not supposed to have a pistol in the United States, especially on our Indian reserve. I would rather do paperwork and why you had to discharge it instead of having to go look for you, but we won't find you. And I'm like, cool, but you only give me one clip. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, right. It gives me the other four. I had that under my gun. A police officer gave that to me. You know, that's how bad Sitongas are in Omaha and the Omaha Indian Reservation. So, yeah, I was crazy. Scared, you know.
Yeah.
Man, Tom, this is awesome. We could talk all day long. We try to keep our shows around an hour, but man, you want to plug anything you're doing for our listeners and where they can find you and hear more of these stories?
Basically, Facebook group Sasquatch Island. That's the one I'm on. I also am a member of Monster X Radio, monsterx.com. You can go listen to my podcast, a subscription one called Sasquatch Island. I've got all kinds on there. YouTube, I have Sasquatch Island and Seasons of the Sasquatch. Both channels you can go to, watch all my videos. And don't forget to slap that subscribe button like a rogue Sasquatch slaps a disrespectful human upside the head so that you can watch more of my shows. Share everything, of course. You know, Moccasin Telegraph, share, so other people know about me. And as you can tell, I'm Bigfoot without the BS. I like to have fun with what I'm doing. Come on an expedition with me. I do expeditions in Washington State and in Vancouver Island, Canada. You can go to SasquatchIsland.com and I'll bring you out. And if you're not a believer, I'll make you poop your pants. Sasquatch will help me.
Nate, come on.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah. Not a better reason to go to America's Hat in the Great White North and see our friend Tom.
Maybe with the COVID, Sasquatch. Come to Seattle. I live 15 minutes from the airport. I can take you 20 minutes from our condo, and it's on like Donkey Kong up there. Sasquatch is all over.
Well, we can sneak across the border too. Let's make a night of it, huh?
Yeah, I got to update my passport.
I'm ready to go.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Washington State. You guys are in the U.S. Yeah. I live in Washington.
I want to come to Canada. I want to pay twice the amount I should for beer. Let's make this happen.
It's because it's real beer.
I just love it. I love all you pros see so many Sasquatch. It's not even funny. It's great.
Actually, I've only seen them 7 times.
That's it?
I've had 7 close encounters. I've heard them and smelled them and knew they're around numerous times. But, you know, they're just like cougars. Vancouver Island has the highest concentrations of cougars, and I've seen one on the island in 55 years. Go figure. Wow.
You're talking about like cats, not the overly aggressive middle-aged women, right?
I got one of those. Buried her.
Tom, you're great. You're a great man. Funny stories. Good storyteller. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks so much, Tom.
Telling us about some blurry creatures. If you see those little people, and stay away from those.
I don't want to go near them. I don't want nothing to do with those ones. They're bad juju, those ones. Don't forget to send me a link so I can post it on all my groups so other people can know about blurry creatures. Yeah, we'll do. Yeah, I like you too. You guys got a good deal going. Keep it up.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. Appreciate your time, man. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Yeah, and send us that photo of, you said you were going to send us a photo of that trailer.
Yeah.
Got ripped open.
I'll go have a.
Yeah.
I'll go have a smoke and a pee and I'll come in and do that.
All right. Tom, you're a good man. You are a good man. We're gonna come find Sasquatch with you.
Oh yeah. If your listeners want me on again, come on, I got more stories.
All right. We'll have to bring it back.
We'll do it.
Yep.
Okay. I'll talk to y'all later. Right, thanks, be safe out there, the investigations people. Oculus luck. Go in peace.
Thanks.
All right.
All right.
Be good. Good Tom.
See ya. We'll be right back.
It's really interesting to, honestly, man, like to run the gamut here and talk about like the difference between Duke and Tom and where they sit on the spectrum, right? We talked about this in the very beginning of everything in the five pillars and trying to understand and kind of make what is of, you know, is this thing purely like a spiritual or a supernatural thing, or is this an actual biological animal? And, you know, just in a few weeks here of us doing sort of beginning this journey, we've found people that land on both far ends of that spectrum. And I think it's fascinating, man. It's like,
yeah, right.
It really is fascinating. Like you have this very native Aboriginal person that's like, this is a real thing. These are like people. They just decided to stay in the woods and went on, you know, he loved rogue. Rogue is his word. They love to go. They're just rogue people that just decide to stay out there. And then you've got Duke and he's talking about portals and things disappearing. And then and also talking about native people like in the Southwest that talk about giants living on their side of portals. And so you have this mix of like a gamut of not only just the Aboriginal people and their view of this creature and where it falls in that spectrum, but then sort of the modern day look at like, you would hope to be an objective look at this, where I try to come from an objective standpoint and saying, you know, we'll try to figure out what this is. Like, is, I don't know where I land yet, man.
It's almost like the more you go, the weirder it gets and the more confused you get. And I think with this subject, you know, you start out, you think you know a few things, you watch a couple of documentaries, you got it in your mind, oh, I know exactly what these things are. I can't believe everyone else doesn't see this. But then you start hearing the weirder stories, and then you hear weirder stories, and then you start going, man, I have no idea. But it is interesting, though, that his perspective is totally different than somebody who lives a couple states away.
Yeah.
The downplaying of the supernatural was a little interesting to me on this one. Like, pretty adamant that that's not what it is. Anyone who says there's a supernatural experience is doing drugs, mushrooms.
Well, he poops, he eats, he pees, you know. I mean, yeah. I'm convinced that like
I wasn't expecting that, to be honest.
Me neither, because I there is so much I feel like with the Aboriginal and Native cultures that delve into the spiritual, right, into the spirit realm and into these things that walk between the lines of.
But like he said, 650 different tribes in North America.
Sure.
So
I mean, and we're not painting with a broad brush. I'm just.
This is why I love this podcast, because it's going to get weirder and it's going to get harder to understand.
Let's get weird, man.
And there's going to be more blurry creatures and you're going to get more confused. I mean, I'm a decade into like reading about this stuff, listening to this stuff, and nothing blows my mind. But you know what's cool? You know what I thought was cool at the end? Tom's like, yeah, you guys got a good thing going here. Here's the thing. You know, someone like Tom, who's so well versed in this topic, it's cool to be able to talk to someone with all those experiences and be able to carry the conversation and to keep going and him have a good time. Because there's a lot of people who try to dive into this topic and it's just, they don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. And
it's a little validating too, actually, too.
Because you start a show, you start talking about Bigfoot. You don't know how it's going to go. But you don't know if people are like, all right, don't go on that show with those guys. They don't know what the heck they're talking about, you know?
Yeah, and I'm at the point, man, I'm open. Let's talk about it. Like, let's put it out there. And I don't want to make any conclusions or decisions for anybody else but myself. And I guess it's fun. Like, let's lay that. We talked about it in the very first episode. Let's get a look at all of this as if we were laying out a case in court.
What's interesting about doing a podcast is you have to get good at asking questions, and you have to be an active listener and kind of be a journalist too. You know, you're writing a story about something. You can't bring your cognitive bias into the story. You have to try and ask the questions, because there's a lot of times I'm like asking these questions, I'm like, I don't know, I mean, I don't know if this goes against what I believe on the inside, but I gotta ask it, you know?
Right. And then I mean, even a little pushback, and I think that's good though. Like, I think just a little bit, because I'm all about letting somebody go and talk about what they believe in and the things and the experiences they've had. But I do appreciate like a couple times you push back saying, well, I don't know, like maybe there is some spiritual thing to this, because there's other tribes and other people out there that they've had experiences they can't explain that they would consider to be a supernatural experience. So,
yeah.
But I mean, you have to lay it all out there, and that's what I'm here for. I'm here for laying it all out there, and let's see where it all lands. And
well, you having fun, Luke?
I am, man. Tom was Tom was awesome. I don't know. I want to have like a beer. I don't. I mean, I'm not gonna smoke a cigarette.
All
with
these
guys
are great. Imagine sitting around the bonfire with like 25 Bigfooters. It'd probably.
I mean, it sounds fun to hang out with, man. Like I'll hold the 30-06. I'll hold the 30-06 while he tries to scare the juvenile Sasquatch. I mean,
I know that's crazy,
just
man.
Keep me in the cabin, man. I'm not trying to.
You got to have some cojones, some mangoes to jump out and scare a juvenile Sasquatch. I'll tell you that. That's where I'm gonna end this right now. Like, tip my hat to you, Tom. You're a bigger man than I would. I'd be hiding in the cabin.
And I'm saying this, Nate. Like, we literally have to get ourselves to Montana to see Duke. We gotta get ourselves to British Columbia to see Tom. Because I'm telling you, I mean, I'm gonna remain on a skeptic on the outside, I think, until I can, you know, have some kind of experience. And these guys are saying they can make it happen.
Hey, I'll promise you this. First time I see a Sasquatch, I hope you're there next to me, Luke.
Right. Me, you, Jose Canseco.
And we just somehow. Well, thanks for listening to our show, Blurry Creatures. If you can, go rate us on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. It's really important. It's really helpful. Give us a 5-star review if you love what you're hearing. Help us get up in the charts and get more people listening to this show and keep us going.
And that's honestly the best way you can support us is to go and review the show. That's how the algorithm works. And Nate and I love doing this, and you can really help us help you. We're going to continue diving down the proverbial rabbit hole. I'm Luke Rogers.
And I'm Nate.
And this is Blurry Creatures.
Send us an email, blurrycreaturespodcast@gmail.com.
Make sure you add Nate on Friendster.
Add me on Friendster.